This is an exclusive for Future Health Now members. I'm Dr. Carolyn Dean, and I'm interviewing my publisher, John Manley, today. Every 15 minutes, we'll take a quick break to see if people have questions and answers. Disclaimer.
Just a question.
Oh, all right.
Hey, so, they got answers. That's great.
Very good. Disclaimer, the entire contents of this teleconference are based upon the individual personal opinions of Dr. Carolyn Dean and John Manley. Unless otherwise noted, the information in this teleconference and any recording rendered is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional and is not intended as medical advice. It is intended as a sharing of knowledge and information and experiences. I encourage you to make your own healthcare decisions based upon your own research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. So John, John's my publisher for Future Health Now, my blog and my website, and he suffered a host of debilitating symptoms most of his life, principally severe IBS, weight loss, chronic fatigue, skin rashes, headaches, sinus problems, back pain, the list goes on. So we're going to go into his story, how he went from bad to worse to better again and better than ever. And we'll find out what worked for him and what didn't. So John will be doing all the talking. I'll just interject questions here and there. So John, let's begin at the beginning. When you were born, tell us all about it.
Okay, well, I don't remember much. I was quite young at the time, but actually my uncle was he was a fanatical journal writer, and he was like my best friend when I was born. So he had actually, even though I'd never, he died soon after I was born, a few years after I was born, but he had written very accurate accounts of the whole thing. But the day I was born, they started to notice that my right eye wasn't really responding properly, and the conclusion they came to pretty quickly, actually, and I was kind of shocked to parents, the bedside manner of some of these eye doctors is not the best. They just concluded I had cancer and that the eyes had to be removed. And so that's what they had told my parents, I think, like the day after I was born, that, you know, they felt that they should basically rush me into surgery and remove both my eyes. And
wow, both eyes.
Yeah, both, okay. Yeah, they felt, well, both eyes, the one eye, the right eye was really bad. It was obviously, they felt, had this full-grown cancer growth, but the left eye, they felt, it showed some signs of a tumor, but you can't actually see anything wrong with the eye on the outside. It's just when they dilate it and put the drops in, and apparently it took like four nurses to hold down this newborn baby because he did not like having those clips put in his eye and the bright lights and the eye drops.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But anyways, my parents were rather smart about the whole thing, and you know, they did something I don't think a lot of people still do. It's, they got a second opinion, and then when the second doctor told them that it was cancer, they got a third opinion, and they saw seven different doctors.
Wow.
And one of the clue things was my father has a lot of eye problems, so they actually, the seventh doctor got the idea, well, why don't we look at my father's eyes and see what they say, and they concluded my father had cancer too, so it was starting to sound a little ridiculous.
When in doubt, diagnose cancer.
Yeah, and I think that was basically it. But then he did some more, you know, he concluded, okay, well, I don't think, his eyes, my father actually was, he had me when he was like 50, which is another long story, but of infertility problems in the family that suddenly resolved themselves, and then we ended up having lots of brothers. But no, my dad... oh, wait, let me turn off the chimes there. We're getting, every time someone new comes in the door, we're going to have
okay,
that beeping sound. So anyways, where was I? Yeah. It was basically the short end of it was I discovered I had this condition known as coloboma, which is where it's actually during the sixth or seventh month of gestation, where all these the finishing touches on a lot of organs are supposed to happen, they just don't, and including principally the eyes, where the back tissue and different parts of the eye just don't form, and then for whatever reason they think that looks like cancer, and really it's just an absence of nothing, so I don't know how they mistake it. Today is no problem, because when my son was born, my son had the condition even worse, and I wasn't going to put him through the whole was cut his eyes out thing. But we just, I brought him to the doctor, and the doctor just had one look. Oh, yeah, it's coloboma, you know, and that was the end of it. So they've come a long way since when I was young.
And so, do those tissues grow in? Do they become normal
never.
Over time? Okay.
There's never been ever a case of where they... And originally, there's another condition where, I mean, it has different levels. There is children who are born where their kidney tissue and their eye tissue have not formed adequately at all. And when they go on renal, they're on renal failure from the day they're born. And usually they don't live very long being on dialysis as a newborn. And I don't know, maybe you know this because I know you're more into the Chinese medicine than I, but I heard there's a connection between the kidneys and the eye. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Very interesting. So you lived with this malformed tissue all your life.
Yeah, and it was actually not until 20 years later that I ended up going to the University of Waterloo, where they had an expert in coloboma, and they loved me there. Like, they would pay for me to go down there and pay for a hotel, have me in front of all the medical students, because you can go there, and they got pictures of my eyes, and they used me in the class. I got sick of going down because they weren't helping me. But he did bring, I was like their lab guinea pig. You know, I also got invited, plus my father, plus my son, to go all the way down to the States to see some other doctor in Maine. I was like, forget it. But the one thing they really did help me with is they show that there's a systemic connection between not just the eyes forming improperly, but then other tissues, and particularly the digestive tract. They also find bone structure and so forth. So it allowed me to realize that this was more than just an eye problem.
And that's where you have the IBS issues.
Yeah, the IBS issues came... I think I always had IBS issues. It's just when you're young, you just kind of don't care, I think, and you just think it's normal to have to spend 20 minutes on the toilet just to go to the washroom.
Your first real problems, you said they were in high school. So, like you say, you were ignoring them, and then you really noticed them in high school?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, probably when I really start to see, and I think this is what was a tipping scale, because I think... You know, I think a lot of it comes down to lifestyle, too, and my lifestyle wasn't very good, and I think if I had been living a healthier lifestyle, I wouldn't have caused the condition to get worse. But the principal one was I can't remember which grade it was. I think it was like grade 3 or 2. We were just getting swimming lessons, and we were all going down to the local rec center and having swimming lessons. I remember dunking my head under the water and suddenly just smelling this horrible smell, and almost feeling like this gas bubble around me. And when we came out of the pool, or we came to the surface, the lifeguards just started screaming, backwash, backwash, and they cleared the whole pool completely out of everybody, rushed us all outside, because apparently someone had messed up with the controls or something and had flooded the pool with pure chlorine gas.
Oh, my gosh.
And myself and my two brothers, were right by one of the output parts in the water, and we had just gone and dunked our heads into the water, you know, perfect timing. And they rushed us all outside, and they pumped up the air conditioning and stuff. And the solution was just give everybody lots of water, which I kind of laugh at because it was all just water from the tap. So it's like, you know, everyone here just got chlorine poison. Let's give them chlorinated water to help them recover. But and they sent us all home, and I remember I was choking, and my brothers were choking, and they just said, you know, just let them rest. And we basically got home and just curled up on the floor. And I remember that moment very well, because I knew, you know, as much as you can when you're like 5 or 6 or whatever I was, that I was dying. I knew it 100%, and you're kind of okay with it, except for the unpleasantness of not being able to absorb oxygen properly. It was like no matter how deeply you breathed, it just didn't feel like you were breathing.
Wow.
And our mother, you know, started to catch on. I was, like, purple by that time. And all three of us, you know, were just laying on the ground, basically. So she put us all in the car and drove us down to emergency, at which point we were, like, barely even conscious. And, I just remember.
Well, you said you were 5 or 6 years old. Earlier you said you were in grade 8. So how old were you when you were poisoned?
I'm not sure. I wasn't in grade 8. I was more grade 3, 2.
Okay.
We were just learning to swim, so we were probably fairly young. It's all kind of... I remember the day very well.
I'm sure.
And I remember they would...
I was going to say, with chlorine, your all kinds of receptors in the body are poisoned. So it's like you've got this tissue damage, and then you've got chlorine poisoning that really affects tissue health. So that's when everything really started for you then.
I think so, because I remember it was like right after that I couldn't digest milk anymore.
Okay. Okay.
You know, and I remember, you know, I remember being in the the memory in my mind is this horrifying thing of them cutting my brother's leg open, but I think all they were doing was taking blood out of it. They were doing all these blood samples, and next thing I know it was the next day, and I was on an IV drip, and I had got unconscious for like 12 hours or something. So it's,
wow.
But, you know, the next day they sent us home. They said they took some x-rays of our lungs, and it looks like you're all cleared up now, you can go home. And that was the end of the treatment.
Right.
Which
yeah,
at the time
don't.
We thought, okay, but now I find that baffling. That, you know.
Right. Well, they really didn't know back then what to do for chlorine poisoning. I don't think they do at this point. So, yeah, let's go on to what, yeah, just go into your experience. How did you, what more symptoms did you have, and then how did you start getting out of it?
Yeah, well, that's where I remember my energy level dropped. I was always feeling very depressed. I remember being depressed a lot of the time, and I ended up going to massive periods of just constant diarrhea, which we eventually determined was being caused by milk, so we cut the milk out of the diet. But then I remember once I cut the milk out of the diet, I just even started losing even more weight, and I just alternate constantly with either constipation, diarrhea. It was never just normal. That and just losing. My weight would always be very thin, but it wasn't, you know, horrible at that time. Mm-hmm. And it kind of continued like that for quite a while, always digestive trouble. But it wasn't, like I said, till high school that I remember. And I was doing a community theater at the time, and I just remember being on stage and trying to perform, and it felt like I literally had knives going through my digestive system. And surprisingly, I was actually doing quite well. I was getting lead parts and plays, despite the fact I was in horrible pain, you know, during the auditions.
Well, it helped with your expression. You could really emote with, oh, my gosh.
Well, actually, one of the leading parts I got was playing Dreyfus in the Pink Panther Returns. So, you know, he's a crazy, insane maniac, and I just, you know, I'd be screaming and bellowing and laughing. It was, you know, wasn't hard to pull off under the circumstances. But I remember by the end of high school, I was, like, getting really, really sick. And that was by the time I decided, okay, I should, you know. I went to go see our local medical doctor who we had since we were little, and he's a total idiot. I don't say that to insult the medical profession. This guy is just an idiot. I don't even know how he, if there wasn't such a lack of doctors in Ontario's medical system, he would not have a job. Anyways, he wrote me, I can't remember what he did. I think he gave me some, you know, the first thing they always do is give you antibiotics. Like, take some antibiotics and see if that helps. And I didn't do anything except make me feel worse. And so he recommended me over to a gastrointestinal specialist. And at this time, I had no knowledge of natural health medicine or whatever. I thought, well, this guy's a gastrointestinal specialist. I should be in good hands. And it took, like, you know, 3 months before he was even able to see me. And I go to his office, and this guy, he was not a lung specialist, because I remember the doctor was a complete chain smoker. Except when he was in the examination room, he was always smoking. And I was, you're my doctor, right? Yeah. So that made me feel a little kind of, you know, I didn't think doctors smoked up to that point, you know. So,
oh, wow.
I'd never seen many doctors, and the ones I had didn't smoke, so I thought, you know. Anyways, he did, you know, all the tests. I say all the tests with horror, because I think the tests made me worse. The things they do to you for those, you know, they give you radioactive dye. You know, you got a digestive system's not working right, so they give you a cup full of radioactive dye and tell you to drink it, so they could do the some of the different tests and radioactive egg salad sandwiches. A lot of radioactive food I remember eating with him.
And barium, I'm sure.
Yeah. And, you know, and having tubes stuck up your nose is not very pleasant down into your intestinal tract. And then when that didn't work, they did the, what's it called when they do it the other side? colonoscopy?
Colonoscopy, yeah.
Yeah, I was unconscious for that one, fortunately. But, and then, you know, after all these, you know, it was like 2 or 3 months, they must have cost the, you know, provincial insurance, you know, I don't know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 worth of tests. And I thought, okay, finally he's going to tell me what's wrong with me. And I came into the office, and he said, we got all the results here. And he said, I'm happy to tell you, you don't got Crohn's disease, you don't got this disease, you don't got colitis. He went down all the, you don't got cancer, you know. You got IBS. I'm like, oh, my God, what's IBS? And he says, you got irritable bowel syndrome. I knew that already. That's why I came to you. You know, I knew I had an irritable bowel, so that was, you know, and
it's a diagnosis of exclusion when you exclude the other, you know, half dozen possibilities. Oh, yeah, well, you just have IBS. And there you are, just wasting away in horrible pain with all these symptoms.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a winter time, too, I remember. And, you know, the winter here can be fairly, at that time at least, it was fairly cold. I just remember I was, you know, constantly cold because I realized one of the things I wasn't doing very well was a stimulating fat. And I think a lot of it was because the fat I was eating at the time wasn't very good, and it was part of the issue. But, and then he recommended that I go on a no-fat diet.
Ooh. And is that where you went into, you say you then had extreme weight loss?
Yeah, that's where it pretty much started. And but I think well, now I have a better explanation, but I just remember as soon as I stopped eating fat, my gut even got worse. You know? It was like, because he said, you know, fat takes a long time to digest. It's hard to digest. So he recommended I just stick, you know, more to carbs. And at that time, I didn't know anything about, you know, intestinal bacteria and all that. And I don't think he did either. And the other thing he put me on was an anti-inflammatory. Because I think that's the only thing they have for IBS is give you an anti-inflammatory, which actually worked. I mean, I got to say, as far as relieving the pain, it did cut the pain back significantly, where I actually felt, you know, I was still having all the other symptoms. I was still constantly constipated or having diarrhea, was bloated, but it just didn't hurt anymore. So, you know.
Okay, I think then we get into how you started taking control, but can we just take a minute to ask if there are any questions?
Sure. What we'll do is, how do we do it? We go to question and answer mode, and then if anyone does have a question, they can press *6, I believe it is.
So if you have a question, press *6. We'll take it right away. If not, we'll just keep on going. There's a lot to go over here. Okay, no questions.
Okay.
Now, did you go into raw food right away? I noticed that you said that was...
Not right away. At that time, I was really into, if anything, I was into stir fries and stuff like that at the time because I was trying to improve my diet. Because what I started to realize was a lot of... fried food I started to realize was a problem, like anything like deep-fried French fries or stuff like that. I was starting to, you know, determine for myself, hey, certain things made me feel worse, because I realized if I had, you know, at high school they always had, you know, the French fries, and you had the French fries at lunch, and I remember walking, when I would have French fries for lunch and I'd be walking home that day, I would feel like there was knives going through my intestinal cord tract, so I stopped eating the French fries. But that was the thing. Yeah, I did start to get more into the raw food and was trying to do that. And if anything, that just seemed to make me worse because I remember I was finding raw food very constipating at the time.
Well, how did you even learn about raw food, John? I mean, this is back in what year is this? You're only in your teens and early 20s.
Well, that was at the time I was getting into yoga, and I started, you know, I was originally into martial arts very much, but once I started getting sick, I couldn't keep up with the martial arts and the wrestling. I was just, you know, the time I got to the dojo, I was ready to go to bed. So I started moving to yoga, which, you know, more like the yoga stretches and postures, and then that kind of got me interested in the rest of the lifestyle of yoga and meditation, and then they started, you know, having the recommendations of diet and eating fresh food and so forth. So that's when I started to move into that, trying to find some solution for my... And I started to get an education about how bad we ate, and then I, you know, started going and shopping at the health food store, and I remember one of the first books I saw on the shelf was by Paul Bragg, and I bought that book. That was the first technical health book I ever bought, which I feel had a lot of good suggestions in it, but one really bad one that hurt me a lot, because he recommended no salt in all the food. He had the Bragg's ammonia oil instead, or whatever that means.
No, Bragg's amino acids.
Yeah, it kind of had a salty taste, but we didn't even sell that locally at the time, and so I went off all salt.
Oh, so you didn't really have the sodium or minerals.
At that time I was, not getting salt, and my other GI specialist got me off the fat. And at that time, too, I was finding, I'm not sure so much if it was meat in particular, but just because most meat was fried, that I was avoiding that, too. And I was just finding everything hard to digest. So that was the other issue. It was just the only thing I found easy to digest was carb. Obviously, fruit went down well, but it doesn't really keep you going. So it was around that time that... once it gave me the anti-inflammatory, and I was kind of, on both paths, because I kind of felt, these are doctors, they must know what they're doing, so I got to follow what they're doing, but I also had this other stuff that worked, and I figured they both could coexist, and I don't believe that too much anymore, but...
What both could coexist?
Well, that I was supposed to take all this anti-inflammatory medication, plus, trying to do all this natural health stuff, and then at the same time, I should say, too, I hadn't seen a naturopath at that time. It was at that time that I ended up moving to California.
Mm.
And the warmer weather was, I thought, would have been better. I ended up living in a monastery up in the mountains. So it was a simpler life, and it was easier in some ways because the one thing I was starting to realize a lot was I needed to cook my own food. I couldn't live off microwave McCain french fries and pizza, mm-hmm. This stuff. It was just horrible on my stomach. I found rice and vegetables went down well. I was trying to get into beans, but beans were killing me.
Well, I mean, it's almost like you were forced to go into a healthy lifestyle. You were absolutely forced to. You had no other recourse.
I mean, I was into exercise. That was, I think, my only saving grace. I'd always been very much into exercise, but as far as anything else, I knew nothing, And
mm-hmm.
You don't get any, education at all. And even exercise, it was more solo exercise. Because of my eyesight, I never was into sports, because mm-hmm. I was never very good at them. So that's why I got into things like martial arts and stuff, which actually, it's kind of good to have good eyesight there, too, but you learn how to adapt pretty quickly, which was really good for me, because before martial arts, I was always banging into things. It was very obvious I had eye problems. After 2 years of sitting in an arena being punched, most people can't tell I have eye problems until they see me enough. So, I ended up going down to California, where I thought it was going to be a lot warmer, but because we were so high up in the mountains, it was just as cold as Canada half the time. I got there, and the walls were so thin that the heating was so poor there. I was, more freezing in California in the wintertime than I was in Canada.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean. They don't think that they have to have heating because they're in California. I've experienced that. Now, what was this your experience with a naturopath? You wanted to talk about that a bit?
I better go in order because wasn't until I was horribly sick that I saw a naturopath. I'm not at the point yet where I was really sick. Unbelievable. Because I ended up moving. I was only in the monastery for the first time for 9 months, and it was a good place. It was nothing wrong with it, but I mean, one of the things was you ate. There was a set buffet. You ate what was served, and a lot of the food there was. Later came quickly to understand was not. Didn't work in my constitution. After about 7 months there, my weight had dropped well below 100 pounds. I was just constantly having diarrhea. The anti-inflammatory medication was not working anymore. I even just stopped buying it because I thought it was making me sicker. I don't know why at the time, and I didn't have access to a doctor down there. And my insurance policy was unless I, got really severely hurt in an emergency, if I wanted any medical care, I'd have to pay for it myself. So I wasn't seeing any doctor, and I just remember after 7 months, since we're kind of in a monastery, we would, after 6 months, every 6 months, we would go on a retreat. So I went on a retreat to another very isolated place with just two other people, and they had a scale there, but they never had a scale where I, in the main monastery. Mm. So when I was over there, they had a scale on this little retreat. It was just in the bathroom. I was like, oh, I wonder what I weigh. And I stepped on this thing, and it said 96 pounds.
Wow.
And, you know, when I was younger, my weight was around 150, 160. I knew I was losing weight. I knew I was getting thinner, but that was just like, I was so, you know, I started to realize how much stress I was under because I was finding everything hard to do. Like, I worked in a greenhouse. I was doing a lot of irrigation, lifting a lot of heavy stuff constantly. And it was like every hour of the day I was just pushing myself just to try to keep up with. Because I just wasn't absorbing, as far as I
well, you,
I
yeah, not absorbing
nutrients, calories.
With the diarrhea, you're just flushing everything out. I mean, it's if you have more than three or four bowel movements a day, you just lose all, you know, everything you put in your mouth goes out. And you drain out all kinds of other minerals as well. Wow.
And then on top of that, I just wasn't sleeping because I just constantly had gas. Because if I wasn't having diarrhea, I was having constipation and gas. And I just remember the nights I would just be, my stomach would just be turning, and I just would not sleep more than 2 or 3 hours at a time.
Right.
And so it was a sleep deprivation plus the calorie deprivation.
No sleep, wow. Now, we're coming up to the half hour, and I know at this point now we're going to turn it around and find out what worked, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think we better, because it's getting pretty scary. Just think for a sec.
Well, you wanted to talk about your naturopath, but I don't know if that fits.
Yeah, well, that was what, I guess the climax to it was, actually, because I was still trying to keep up and everything, and then one day I was just lifting something heavy in the greenhouse, and it just suddenly felt like my entire colon just rammed through my testicles. And I had massive hernia rupture. And I think it was just because, you know, I just wasn't getting enough protein absorbed into me and so forth. Not, you know, it had nothing to do with where I was living. You know, they fed everyone properly. I mean, people were workhorses there. They were like, it was a vegetarian diet, but they gave people plenty of protein. And I can tell you, I saw people working 8 hours a day on the fields, and they were fine, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was just my health issues. But, yeah, I ended up with massive hernia. I mean, hernia, like, oh, boy, I thought.
Wow.
And then I went to my insurance policy. You know, I didn't know what to do at the time. I was kind of clueless. I didn't even know what was wrong with me. You know, I didn't know what was going on.
My
testicle had exploded.
Your colon had dropped into your scrotum.
Yes.
You had a massive inguinal herniation. Okay. Wow. Okay.
And quite painful, having your intestines go through your scrotum. So, you know, I called my insurance on, and they said, well, that's not really an emergency, so we won't cover it. And I called a local doctor. I went to see a local doctor, and they told us, you know, $3,600 to do surgery. Mm-hmm. And that's the only answer I was given was surgery at the time. So, and I had actually, I should mention, I actually had inguinal hernia when I was born, too, and they had done surgery. So it was kind of the relapse. Anyway, so it seemed like I had to go back to Canada. I went back to Canada. I went to the famous Shoal Ice Clinic in Toronto, which was actually kind of a nice place. I don't know if you've ever been there.
I have. I used to send all my patients there. I still do. Yeah, very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they have, as far as, you know, the medical conventional system, I mean, it's like being on a retreat there. It's like this beautiful house out on the rural area sort of Toronto, and mm-hmm. you feel more like you're in a hotel than a hospital, except when they do the surgery, which was rather painful because the anesthetic didn't work. But I remember they were cutting away, and I was sweating, and they're like, are you okay? This really hurts. Is this supposed to hurt this much? They go, oh no, let's give you some more. And then I was gone.
Uh-huh.
So they did the surgery, and it was at that point that after the surgery, I went to go see. I didn't want to go see my gastrointestinal specialist. I didn't want to know what he had to say, and I went and saw a local naturopathic doctor, which was definitely a step in the right direction. He was just out of naturopathic college, had just set up the first naturopathic clinic in our town, I don't want to say anything bad about him, but some of the advice he gave me, well, one was advice he wasn't following himself. I think it was textbook advice. And the first thing he wanted me to do, he said, just eat fruit for breakfast, have just protein and vegetables for lunch, and then just have carb and vegetables for dinner. And I just didn't find that an adequate amount of calories or protein or fat or anything for me. I was just, I tried to follow it as best I could. And then I found that what got me, though, was one day I was down in Toronto and I ran into him and he was at, like, this Chinese buffet king thing picking out. I was like, what are you making me eat like this? And you're over here eating this.
I see.
You know, and he was a big, healthy guy. I'm like, why are you? If you're not even following, I'm not going to follow. But he did. He got me into Chinese medicine a lot and gave me a lot of herbs that did definitely help the digestive system. And I did start to recuperate. And I just, you know, I was still, my digestion was bad, but it wasn't where I was constantly having diarrhea. And he got me in. The biggest thing he got me into, I think, was he was the one who first introduced me to lactase enzymes. Because even though he was not a big fan of milk, every time they put me back on milk, I did better. And the lactase enzymes stopped the allergic reaction to the milk. So
So this is where we come into the total individuality of your diet and everybody's diet, where everybody would say someone with IBS shouldn't have dairy, but for you it worked. What were some of your other idiosyncrasies?
Well, yeah, you know, I two things. One, I wonder often if it is an idiosyncrasy or if it's just because, like, if I didn't have the lactase enzyme, dairy was horrible for me. You know, I'm just wondering if, because what I read eventually, and he had given me the specific carbohydrate diet book, and I had done the specific carbohydrate diet for 3 months, and that was part of what he had recommended, and I think it did help a lot, because in that book they said that the enzyme, the cilia, I think it was called, that released the enzyme for lactase in the colon, are the first one to go when your gut's a mess.
They're
the most sensitive. And I think that's what happens. And then if you're not breaking down the lactose, it all gets consumed by the bacteria in your colon, and then they produce more acid and toxins and whatever, and just makes the problem worse and worse. And candida, you know, if you're not going to digest it, something else will, and candida and all that kind of stuff just...
To synthesize that, a lot of people, when they get diarrhea, then it wipes out the cilia that absorb you. Actually, these cilia, they hold the disaccharide enzymes that break down sugars. And so when they're just not there, you aren't digesting. So since you'd had chronic diarrhea, you know, they were all gone. You just didn't have those enzymes at all.
Yeah, and I think the same was true. Even it was at that point, it was so bad I couldn't break down starch either. Because that's what he got me off the starch. He got me off dairy sugar. Well, the dairy sugar we just dealt with by giving me lactose enzyme. But so you know, I did that for 3 months. I found it hard. I never felt comfortable on that. Like I just feel better when I have starch. I don't eat like tons of starch, but it just. You know, I used to work, that analogy you gave about the sugar being like paper, and then starch like wood, I think, and then protein, or no, fats like coal, was that it?
Yeah, protein like coal and fats are like, you know, something even harder to break down. So, yeah, these things burn off too quickly. And just to say, the specific carbohydrate diet, that's Elaine Gottenschul's book, and she tells people just, you know, no starches, no sugars whatsoever, and that's how she helps people heal their guts.
No white sugar, yeah. The fruit sugar was okay, but yeah.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Because the simple sugars, maple syrup was out, which was really disappointing.
Right. But even fruit sugar, you have a story about apples as well.
Yeah, well, and in general, too, I found, you know, sugar in general was bothering me. I just noticed when I'd eat anything sweet, even just even fruit that was okay, it would make my stomach bloated. And that was actually when the doctor was always giving me new books to read. So it was kind of good because he had his own library there in the clinic, and he would lend me everything. And
you probably taught him. You taught him so much with your experience, actually.
I was just experimenting.
Exactly.
Try this book, see if it works.
Right. Yeah, let me know so I can learn. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Because he gave me another book, which was kind of looking at caveman-style diets, but it was the main thing I remember I got from it was they were saying that the whole idea of mixing fruit with other food and how fruit needs, you know, digest very quickly. And once I started doing that, it was like, oh, It was like just a big relief because I found that if I had the fruit before a meal, just on its own, it didn't give me problems. If I ate it with the food, it was just like this big bubbly, like it felt like I would, when you see yeast bubbling in a bowl to make bread, it was just, that's how I felt almost all the time. And I remember once but I still found it was like one or two pieces of fruit a day was like plenty. And, you know, something sweet maybe once a week or something, but it was, I love ice cream, but, you know, other than that, it was just like, once a week maybe. And I know if I eat something that, you know, dessert or whatever, it would take me time to recover. And if I, you know, ate it once a week, I'd recover pretty quick. If I ate it every day, then I would just never have time to recover, and it'd just get worse, 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 and worse.
Mm-hmm.
So, but after...
the apples? Sorry.
Well, the apples took me a while to figure out, because I was actually in a lot of the other specific issues, because it was... I got better. I mean, like I said, I was not what I consider in great shape, but I was doing okay. I went out and once I felt good enough, I went to Toronto and stayed there for a while, worked a little, but I was really having trouble working. I found it like I was okay for like the first 4 hours of the day, and then after lunch, and then I could barely stay awake. I was always just getting fired. So, but then I applied and I got accepted back into the monastery. You had to always take a medical exam, and granted, I kind of fudged the medical exam a little, but they let me go back, and I ended up having to. There was a new law in America that Canadians, even in a volunteer situation, couldn't work on a commercial farm, which because we sold stuff. So they moved me to work in the kitchen, which was a lot easier than working in the fields all day. And I ended up. Doing that for a year and a half until I ended up in the computer lab, but it was there that, you know, I wanted to get better. That was the thing. I was like not horrible, but I wasn't anywhere close to where I felt comfortable, and I was still exhausted every afternoon. You know, it was easier there, and they were more lenient, and you're a volunteer. I wasn't getting paid anything, so I was like, what, are they going to fire me, you know? So, mm-hmm. You know, they ended up putting me more in an organizational point of where I was running the entire kitchen as far as directing everybody, so I didn't really have to do too much manual work, and I was quite good at the organizational side, and I wasn't thrilled with the work, but it at least wasn't physically as demanding. But, you know, that's when I was still having all these different problems. And it was actually, I'd gone downtown one day to get something, some stuff for the kitchen or something. It was in a health food store, and I was going through the bookshelf, just curious what they had on the shelf there. And I was still trying to find some answers. And I pulled off this book about Ayurveda. I had never even heard about Ayurveda too much. Like, I heard about it because we were into yoga and stuff in the monastery, but, you know, I just didn't know that much about it. And it was interesting, too, because in the monastery, we constantly had doctors coming through, and they always wanted to help me. And I saw every single doctor. I even saw Dr. Bernard Jensen's crew, because they actually lived next door to Dr. Bernard Jensen. So that was kind of neat, too, before he passed away. So I got to see everybody. Everybody had a different system.
Uh-huh.
And some of the stuff, I mean, you know, 1 week you got to get off milk, and they're giving me rice milk and soy milk and dried apricots, and then I'd see another guy, and he'd be like, no, you need eggs and starch, and, you know, so I was trying everything, and I could never, but it was when I pulled that book out on Ayurveda, it was like something clicked on me, and we got paid $1 a day, just kind of basic necessities, and I was like, my whole week, you know, whole month allowance just to pay for that book. And I was like, no toothpaste for this month. So I'm exaggerating a little, but and I got that book, and it's a very poorly written one. I have to say, it was the Indian mentality is very confusing. I'm not prejudiced against Indians at all. I love Indian people and so forth, and Indian food. But sometimes the way they write Ayurveda books is just you got to read it 14 times before you understand it. But the thing I did get, it was just like, but the thing was they had the whole Ayurveda constitution, and you fill out the survey at the beginning, answer these questions, and we'll tell you what you're a Vata, a Pitta, or a Kapha, the three, or a combination. And I filled out the thing, and it's more based, too, on what you are kind of natural, like what you were when you were little, based versus what you've kind of, you know, balanced yourself to be as you get older and wiser. And I filled it out, and it was like, my score was just Vata, 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 you know? But that was the thing, and then it had like all these, you know, start describing what Vata people are like, and I'm like, well, yeah, that sounds like me, and you know what their tendencies are, and so forth, And then it, you know, it recommended, these foods were really bad for Voss. I said, oh, well, that's all my favorite foods, you know. You know, and it was like, I was like, you know, potatoes, they say, you know, apples, all the nightshades, just really irritating, drying. The problem, big problem with Voss was that they're dry. And they don't hold water properly, they don't hold fat properly, so they need more water and they need more fat, and they don't do well with things that are dry and will thus suck water out. And like one of the things I was doing was having dried apricots and dried prunes.
Oh.
And that was killing me. I really know that was killing me. Like, I don't even know how I did it. Because you eat these dried fruits and you put them in a dry colon, and it's just, and I was wondering, I was constipated all the time. But the apple thing, I couldn't believe. I couldn't believe the apple was bothering me. So one morning, I just said, okay, I'm just going to have two apples for breakfast, and that's it. And I thought I was going to die. Like, I was really ready to, like, go to an emergency room and have them cut open my colon. I felt so bad.
Wow. So what it's that your colon is already dry. You eat these dry foods, and it just sucks more water into the to try to dilute
into the food,
into the food, and takes it from you, so you become even more dehydrated, right? Okay.
I guess it's either that or it's a combination of, I think that's more or less it, and then the, but I found my stools would be like rock hard, too, like when they would, it felt like a rock coming up my ascending colon along the transcending and then down the descending, and it would take like 12 hours. And the other thing I realized, and what I got from Ayurveda, was, you know, the fact of needing fat and so forth, and the lubrication that just wasn't there. Like, and this isn't, like, I should clarify, like, all the stuff I'm saying is, I don't even think it's healthy for a lot of people. You know, it's healthy for certain people with certain constitutions, and I think that's the problem is, and even in maybe in like 10 years, it won't even be the healthiest thing for me anymore, because I might be in a, you know, a healthier state and so forth, but, you know, when you got, and I could have verified, too, because the other thing that was really keenly aware of was I was always going pee. I just go pee. I drink something, it comes right out of me. You know, I just don't retain water very well. I've never, you know, been very, you know, a lot of people have a lot of water weight on their body. I'm just like muscle and bone, you know, that's all I am. I got no fat tissue. So, you know, and they listed, you know, these various different foods that were just very irritating. Vata is a particular problem, they said, is everyone has a strong point and a weak point, and Vata's weak point is the stomach area. And they tend to be more creative people, but it's almost like they don't got all their feet on the ground type thing, you know, versus someone like a Kapha who's very solid, but, you know, they just want to go and be a garbage man, or, you know, something like that type of, you know, very routine job, they're very content with that. Well, someone like me would just go insane.
And go to a monastery.
Yeah, but even in the monastery was a big problem. Like, because a lot of the chores, work I ended up doing, I realized that was part of my health issue, was I was doing the wrong type of work.
I needed
creative work. Cause, like, when I was, from the moment I was, like, able to read and write, I was writing novels. Like, we'd be out there in the playground, the recess, I'd be sitting there writing these novels. You know, my brothers would go out buying Joe, and I'd go out buying books. You know, I was really into literature and creating stuff, and then I got into theater, and after the monastery, I made the wrong decision and ended up going into fine art, which was mainly a bad decision, partly just because, you know, being half blind, it just was a really tough career move. Had to do everything under a magnifying glass and a telescope, but. But I just realized, and that was one of the reasons after 2.5 years in the monastery I left, was just because the work I was doing there was usually just very, you know, it was important work and it was helping people, but I hated working in the kitchen. I mean, I was fast, I was organized, I could chop things like a robot. It was, you know, you know, you learn how to when someone puts in front of you, you know, like 200 pounds of carrots and we need it by 12 o'clock, so you learn how to get fast, but...
In the last 15 minutes here, then let's find out your typical day, I guess, is what we can follow up with.
Okay. Because it's hard to cover a whole lifetime, isn't it, in 1 hour?
It is. You're doing great, though. You are. So, yeah, I love the Ayurvedic part and how you figured out, you know, who you were. And now how do you apply it? What's your typical breakfast, for example?
Oh, Well, breakfast, I've tried everything. Like, I've tried the, I've tried the smoothies and the protein shakes and stuff, and they go down fine. It's just like 1 hour later, I'm starving, you know. I've always had that problem with a lot of these health drinks and stuff. It's just like it goes down good, and after an hour, I'm ready for lunch, you know. And that's the thing with Avada Constitution is that was the other thing. It just works very fast. They have a very high metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because you know how there's a whole debate, either you have a high-protein diet, a high-fat diet, or high-carb diet. Well, mm-hmm. I found I do good with all three. High carb, high protein, high fat, you know. Usually what I had started probably 6 months ago was an Ayurvedic thing that I put off for so long because I just thought it was a dumb idea. But even though apples raw are horrible for me, apples when they're stewed are perfectly fine. And I knew that for quite a long time. And I have that first thing every morning is just stewed apples. And I find that just does amazing things for my colon. I mean, it just... Like, the proof for me has always been, the proof is in the poo, you know? It's like when your bowel movements become normal.
Not the proof is in the pudding, the proof is in the
poo. No, the proof is in the poo. And that's the thing, when I follow, you know, mainly cooked food, I don't eat very much raw food, it just drives me nuts. I just can't handle it. And I eat cooked food, grains, and I don't eat, anyway, I'll get into more detail, but... my main point is when I do that, I don't have loose stools, I don't have diarrhea, I don't have constipation. I usually have two, sometimes three bowel movements a day, and they are just humongous, and they come out easy, and it's like a miracle, you know? To me, it's like a miracle after all those years of suffering and, you know, being constantly, you know, consumed with, you know, what's happening in my gut, you know, it becomes all... You can't do anything. For breakfast, it's usually we soak everything. And that's, I think, part of this gets rid of the dryness problem. But it's usually soaked oatmeal and milk, organic cows, non-homogenized. I find homogenized milk is horrible. But the whole fat, the non-homogenized makes me sick. I just have diarrhea with that, too, which I think is a lot of the problem with IBS and milk, too, is this homogenized dairy products. But so it's usually cooked porridge, basically. I usually don't sweeten it. I find if I, you know, I had the apples about a half an hour before and get my son up, and he has some apples too, and get him in a bath, and then we actually sing a little, and then we go have the main meal, and I don't tend to sweeten it. I find the milk makes it sweet enough, and we just boil the milk and cook it, and it goes down great. Lunch is always Ayurveda cachata. I just love it. It's it's basically rice, brown rice, but the main dish is it's either... The only two legumes I can eat are mung and red lentils. Everything else is a nightmare, but those two will no problem digesting them at all. And I've heard many people say that, you know, can't digest kidney beans or all the other garbanzo beans or whatever, but red lentils and... mung beans. They're just beautiful. So we cook it up. I always puree it though. I find I do better if I just puree the beans, and it's cooked with vegetables and Ayurvedic Indian spices, which is kind of an art to learn how to do. It's not hard, but there is an art to it. But those spices help my digestion probably more than almost anything. And it's so important. Like, I used to, when I first tried to do it, I just made a mess of it. Because I just put all the, you know, get the tumeric, you know, and there's so much scientific research out there now about turmeric and cumin and all the things they do. But I used to, you know, just put it all in the pot, you know, grind it up, put it all in the pot, bring it to a boil. And it never tasted like, you know, when you go to Indian food. And I later learned, you know, there's a certain procedure to it. You know, you got to, I put the black mustard seeds in with the ghee, clarified butter, and you pop them like, you know, like popcorn.
I see.
If you eat those black mustard seeds, like, you just grind them, they taste horrible. But if you pop them, they're delicious. I mean, the aroma, even just like when people come over and they, because we usually do that like right after breakfast, just put that on, get it cooking, and just let it slow cook the whole morning. And people are like, come over and they're just like, oh my goodness, can I stay for lunch? You know, it's like,
we'll have to start putting some of those recipes up, because you start with heating up the ghee and then put the black mustard seeds in that, and then they
and
pop.
And put the lid on, let them pop for a bit until they calm down. Then I put in the onions, saute that. Oh, no, sorry. I put in the cumin seed whole. You know, mm-hmm. if you saute the cumin seed just till it starts to smell aromatic, it will change the whole flavor of the dish. If you just put the cumin seed in and boil it, and I think another good example is if you ever just tried putting garlic and onions in a soup and just boiling it, it tastes almost like they're raw still. But if you saute them, so there's a science to the sauteing. Like, I always thought sauteing was bad or something, but I just know it just tastes better, it feels better, it digests better.
And then I put coriander in. Mm.
And it's all whole spices, too. Like, I don't, it's all freshly ground. And it doesn't take a lot of work. And coriander, ginger, and turmeric.
Ginger and turmeric. And, yeah, the sauteing, it probably releases things rather than... It does both, actually. It starts releasing, but then it seals in some of it. Yeah, I know. It's the art of... chefery.
Yeah, I think there's
Julia
something to it.
Child would, yeah.
Because, I mean, I know all the arguments people have for raw food, and I used to, you know, really try to do the raw food thing, and I was just getting sick all the time on it, you know, losing weight and stuff like that. And I'm not saying everyone, you know, that raw food is bad, but it was just bad for me, and that's all I really cared about.
But for you, the vegetarian lifestyle is working.
Yeah, I mean, I've had protein tests and everything like that, and, you know, and then there's so much research out, too, that, like, mung and the pea, you know, a lot of the legume proteins are some of the most easy to absorb, and, you know, they've got all those pea powders out now, and everyone, all the wrestlers are getting, weightlifters are into it now, but, yeah, and I do eat dairy, you know, like, and I do eat eggs. I don't, I'm not a vegan by any stretch of the imagination. I love my eggs and scrambled eggs, and you know, dinner's usually, more kind of traditional. A lot of times it'll be either like cheese and vegetable soup with tortilla. I never eat yeast bread. I think we covered that in the module. My experience, the yeast is just a nightmare for me. But flatbreads are fine. Chapatis, tortillas is another one. Sometimes of pita bread. And sometimes my wife will make like banana bread or something without yeast, just egg. But I don't eat that every day because I find, again, sweet stuff is just like once or twice a week. That's good. You know, I enjoy it, but if I have it every day, it's... and, you know, the most amazing thing for me, the most biggest proof, and what really accelerated me in the last 3 years, really, I think in the last 3 years I've been healthier than any other time in my whole life, was with my son being born, and he is like a replica of me. You know, it's like... He had all the same dietary problems. I mean, obviously he has the same coloboma issue, and it's worse than him because he's almost totally blind. But but we were just finding, you know, it was like when my stomach was bad, his stomach was bad. But unlike me, you know, if my stomach's a little upset, I just, you know, sleep through it. Newborn baby doesn't sleep through it, you know. they are furious. And, you know, tomatoes, like I would sometimes still have tomatoes in the summer just because I like them and stuff like that. And we give Jonah tomatoes, and he is just up the whole night screaming until it comes out. And when it comes out, you know it's tomatoes because it looks like it. And I'm talking, we pureed it for him. I wasn't like he just didn't chew it properly. So we found that we put him on the same diet as me, and he was just like, you know, relatively healed. You know, it was like a miracle compared to how horrible his health was when he was born. Which also there's a lot of other issues that were involved in that, but I don't want to get into that. But
so you had to go through all this to figure out what you needed to be able to pass it on to him.
Yeah, I wish my father had done that when I was young, but he didn't have the resources to know most of this. I've been actually introducing a lot to my dad because I'm really, he got the same problems. He's just dealt with it. He's lesser. Like my dad, my father was actually a priest for the first 40 years of his life, and then...
Wow.
He ended up running a whole parish in Toronto, and that wasn't really what he wanted to become a priest for. It was more like he felt like he was running a big business, and he just got too stressed out, and he decided he had to leave, and he ended up getting married and so forth. So he, he was going on to 50, and he was working for the government, and I don't think if he didn't have a government job, he probably would have been fired because he was always falling asleep on the job. You know? They would find him in his chair just asleep in the afternoon. And and that's why I ended up, you know, realizing I couldn't do a regular job. That's why I started, originally I became a bookkeeper and just doing books for people at home, because I just needed a nap in the afternoon. I just stopped trying to fight it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized my dad never was able to beat it.
Yeah.
And I always take a half an hour nap after around 2 o'clock, and I just feel great after. I mean, it's a solution. It works. I'm happy with it. You know, I feel if I push myself, and then I can do it one day, but then the next day, and then the next day, and then it, if I don't feel rested by the time I go to sleep at night, it just makes me agitated. And but it was just, the point with my son was, it's just, you know, with him, it's like sometimes I wonder if I'm just, you know, it's just in my mind, you know, that these foods bother me or whatever, I'm being picky. But with a baby, there's no placebo effect. He doesn't know what's being put in his mouth, you know. So I found that reassuring. And then the only other big thing I just wanted to say was the I think a really big revelation for me was up until probably 3 years ago, like, I lived off enema kits. That was one of the ways I kept myself going, was because I'd get so constipated, or it would just be so much gas. Like, sometimes I'd be still going to the washroom, but I just have so much gas, and it just would not stop. It was just horrible, you know? And I found if I did, you know, two enemas, I would be fine. I'd always feel starving after. I'd feel like... And that was how most of my life was up to probably maybe 3 years ago. I would either... feeling starving, but my stomach would feel good, or my stomach would feel horrible and I wouldn't be hungry. It was always one or the other. And blood sugar is always all over the place because of that. But anyways...
well, I'm glad we found each other when you figured all this out. Gosh, I didn't realize it was just 3 years ago you finally put it all together.
Put it all together, and even today, I mean, like, this stuff I just, you know, like, I just caught on to the yeast bread thing when we did the module, really. It was when it really, I had just naturally been avoiding them. I just kind of liked tortillas more. I just, you know, hadn't really thought much about it, and I just don't eat much bread anyway, so it wasn't, you know, but I just suddenly, and the more you avoid it, it was like, any time I did have yeast bread, I would just feel so horrible, and I, you know, before, I just kind of felt horrible all the time, so you don't really know what's causing it. But with the enema kit was, I started to realize that it was just drying my colon out, you know, having all that water come out. And I found that in Ayurveda, what they actually recommended was an oil enema, which I had never even heard of before. And I was like, that actually sounded kind of nice, you know. And I didn't know what it was. I just, that sounds good. So I just, I'll put some sesame oil on the enema kit and then throw the thing away, because, you know, you're never going to clean that out. And I wanted to get rid of it anyways. And I did that, and I felt great. I was, like, just the most amazing feeling. I mean, I had to kind of stay in the house for the day.
But
I later discovered that you're only actually supposed to use, like, a quarter cup of oil. And you can get them on Amazon. They're called Panchakarma kits. Amazon.com sells them. They're really popular. And they're actually good, too, if you to combine. Like, if you do want to do the regular enemas, or if you're into, like, bentonite clay or stuff. Because the problem with bentonite clay, especially for people like me, is it just dries up the colon. Because I used to do all those colon cleanses, and I just felt horrible. But if you actually make sure you lubricate the colon properly. And I'd say that's, you know, really the biggest thing is that in the oil massage. Like, I do a full-body oil massage where I just cover my whole body with warm sesame oil every day. And just let it soak in and do some exercises for 10 minutes. And that's changed my life, too.
Right, so basically it's what you put in. You found whatever food you put in your body has to be the best foods, and then you don't have to do enemas and worry about all the gas and after effects. Right.
Enemas are one solution.
Enemas, yeah. Now, we have to make a decision. It's actually, a whole hour has passed, John. And
okay.
I think we should ask people if there are any questions. And then are we going to go through the points promised in the email, or do you think you've covered everything?
Well, if you want to rush through them, I can, you know, cover it. And,
so let's just unmute for a second and see if there are questions and see if that directs our time a little more. I mean, I don't mind going over, but let's... see
sure, if anyone has a question, they can just press *6 on their telephone, and that will unmute you. Or I should check the email.
I'll check my email as well.
Said people could email. Some people are a little shy, and they don't want to be on the teleconference.
Yeah,
so you can also email if you like, or press *6.
And then if we're not getting questions, which is just fine, let's just run through and see the points promised in the email, because I have the list here.
Yeah, I'll just answer them in 1 minute or less.
Right. You're
30
great.
30 seconds, maybe.
How does less intense exercise prove better for you?
Like I said, I found, you know, my metabolism, and you can even tell I can talk really fast and it doesn't wear me out, but because my metabolism was fast, I find I used to do running and jogging and all that stuff, and I just sped my metabolism up even faster, and I find I'm better off with weightlifting, yoga, and just, you know, moderately fast walking. And that slows my metabolism down, because my metabolism's too fast. I mean, and I'm not saying that's good for, you know, someone who's obviously overweight and, you know, has a slow metabolism. I got to get out and get moving, you know. But for me, it's like I have the opposite. And it's the same, too, I find with talking. Like, if I talk too much, which I'm doing right now, but, you know, if I do it too regularly, I'm better with, you know, I'm kind of an introvert, and it does better for me. But at the same time, as you can see, I don't have any trouble talking. But if I do too much, and that's why I got out of the dramatic arts. Because the dramatic arts was going to kill me. You're on all the time. That's why I went to drawing, but drawing was too much, and I'm finding writing is the happy medium.
Mm-hmm. Observations about body types and diet. You kind of went there with the Ayurvedic. And
it is neat, though. You get into it, and you, like, you analyze everybody you see.
I know. I'm kind of pitta-vata. It's quite interesting. And eating the cooked milk, yes, quickly about that. I know we had it in the module, but just to remind people.
Yeah, well, I really do think that's important. I mean, in the raw and cooked, well, I think for Vata, just because we do better with cooked food. And another problem of Vata, as I didn't mention, was they get cold easy. Their body's naturally cold, so if you put cold food in them, especially in the winter. Like in the summertime, I sometimes have salad and stuff when it, you know, the 3 days of the year it's hot in Canada.
So cooked and warm is better, yeah.
Yeah, for someone else like a pitta who are naturally more hot, you know, raw milk. But I think the big problem is most of our milk is already cooked anyway, so it's essentially a leftover, and it's not raw anymore. You just recook it because it's getting bacteria between the time it was pasteurized and the time you get it.
Amazing.
Which we know because they won't feed it to babies. You know, like a baby is all, you know, if you give your child milk, they tell you reheat it for the baby.
There you go. And you don't follow a vegan diet, but you haven't eaten meat in 13 years. I think you pretty much explained that. You've figured out how to do the legumes and use your eggs and dairy for protein.
Yeah, and nuts. We're into nuts. I should say every morning at breakfast I have the 20 soaked raw almonds. The raw almonds I find are fine, and sometimes wall of raw nuts. Mm-hmm. But I don't do too much nuts. I find peanut butter is kind of iffy. Cashew butter, I like it. I have it once in a while, but it's gaseous to me.
Mm-hmm. The butter's right. And the single most important things for your digestive health has nothing to do with diet or supplements. What's that?
Sleep.
I
didn't really cover that, but I mean, I used to try to push myself to get up by 6 hours. I know people, they do great on 6 hours. They sleep more than six, they get sluggish. But I'm the opposite. It slows me down. If I need to get, like, around 8 hours at night and then half an hour in the afternoon, you know, and I hate that. I hate it with a pad. I don't want to sleep, you know. And I can stay up the whole night or get up early. Yeah, best for me, though, I find that I get to sleep before 9 o'clock. Not tonight, but... and I'll get up, you know, usually I just get up on my own, usually sometime between 4 and 5, unless my son gets me up at 10 and then 1 o'clock and whenever other times he feels like getting me up. But sleep just changed my life when I just said, okay, I got to get 8 hours of sleep every night, and if I miss, I got to catch up. And you pay interest on lack of sleep. It's like, you know, there's an interest they charge on it. You know?
Right. So you mean because you want to get so much done, because you want to do so much, you were just trying to get by on 6 hours. Right.
Yeah, you know, because I'm very creative. There's so much things I'd love to do. I got like 14 books in my head I want to write. I love meditation, and meditation takes up time. I find if I do, especially in the monastery, when we were doing like 3 to 4 hours of meditation every day, I didn't need 8 hours of sleep because, you know, relaxing and so forth. But,
Why eating too many varied foods made your health worse?
Yeah, just, you know, basically because I found there's just only a certain types of foods that my body responds well to, and
right.
You know, like grains. You know, the only grains I eat is wheat, rice, and oats. Mm-hmm. Anything else I find drives me nuts. And I used to, like in Italy, especially when I lived there, it was like corn was really big, and corn just wants to kill me. Cornmeal.
Yeah, so you found out, well, the hard way about all these foods. And
well,
I think
actually, in the end, it was Ayurveda, because when I looked at the Ayurvedic list, I was like, yeah, oh, that's great. You know,
right.
Once I started following the Vedic diet, I was like, bang, all the stuff just made, it just worked. And it was like, you know, right. It's harder when you're a mixed dosha, though. I mean, I was lucky, because I'm just like vata, but when you're like vata, pitta, it gets a little more tricky.
Right.
Or sometimes it is, and sometimes you just got more options. So.
Right. And you said liver snacking dramatically improved your health, so you just don't eat between meals, whereas have you told me that you were hypoglycemic and you were told you had to eat every couple hours?
Yeah. I used to, 2 hours after a meal, my blood sugar would just hit the floor, and I would just feel like I was, you know, I mean, I would take blood tests, and the blood tests weren't that, you know, I was usually around 4.9. You know, but I feel good when I'm more like 6.7 because my wife's diabetic and we got glucometers everywhere, so I just can, you know, learn how to do it. But I feel, you know, my blood sugar feels good when I'm around 7. I don't know if that's healthy or whatever. I know there's a lot of people who want to keep their blood sugar like around 3.2 or something. But, you know, I don't feel good like that. But, yeah, what I think it was liver congestion, and that my liver just would not release any sugar because I was, you know, for different reasons. So it was really hard. I only started that a year ago, and it took me about a month to get over it, but I found it really hard to go, you know, 4 or 5 hours without any food. But now it's like I can't even, to eat 3 or 2 hours after already eating to me is just sickening, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I know,
then,
it was a brilliant module. I learned a lot researching that as well, because your liver is supposed to release stores of glycogen, the sugar stores, 3 or 4 hours after you eat, and if you don't let it go through that cycle, it can get congested just because you keep on feeding your body, and it was fascinating, and it's a physiologically sound premise, and I certainly have benefited by doing it.
Yeah, and it's also just kind of easier to live, you know. You don't have to go find a snack.
Right.
And
now
my son did. We moved my son onto it. Like, my wife was concerned. You know, he's 2.5 years old. He needs a snack. And I don't know. We just stopped feeding him snacks. And he was fine.
Right.
Never asked for it.
Yeah. And what you've learned from your health troubles and how it changed you for the better. I mean, you've kind of alluded to that. But if you could sum up.
Yeah, I think the main thing was that, you know, like, the thing is, you know, in a lot of ways, people might say, well, you haven't really healed yourself. You just have avoided things that are causing, you know, set it off. But at the same time, is there anything wrong with me? You know, and that's what I kind of looked at. Is there anything wrong with the way I am? I mean, that's what I try to do is for so long, okay, I got to be able to eat, you know, all these same foods like other people. I got to be able to keep up to their type of lifestyle. I got to do this and this and this, just like everybody else is doing. And I was, you know, literally killing myself trying to do that just because that's not how I'm designed. And it's like whatever issues I have with me now in this life, I feel as, you know, I'm supposed to learn things from it. Like I've learned to be, you know, it's just so many things I've learned. But you just, you know, the slow down, for example, just for this one-off example, and just realizing, hey, I can't do everything. I got to, you know, decide what do I really want to do with my life and just focus on that stuff and leverage things like, I would probably be working 10 hours a day if my health was better. Instead, I've, you know, learned how to, you know, usually make the same amount of money a lot of people would make in 10 hours just by getting into work that, you know, produces more. Working at home has been great because I see my son growing up and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So
and, you know,
just
the
don't
fact
fight
that,
it.
Right, and the fact you were born with this genetic situation where your tissues weren't fully developed. I mean, you've actually overcome something huge. I imagine why they wanted to study you at McMaster was because not a lot of people are doing well with that condition.
No, and I went through the Canadian National Institute for the Blind. I learned how to read Braille because I was having at the time humongous sinus headaches, and they said, well, that's because of eye strain and you're trying to do too much with your eyes with what eyes that you have. So they said, you know, they gave me audio books, and I learned how to read grade 1 and grade 2 Braille, you know, fingers and everything like that. And my eyesight was getting worse. And I later realized it was nothing to do with my eyesight, the sinus trouble. It was more to do with I wasn't getting, you know, lubricated my, the nasal lubrication thing made an amazing difference because I'm dry and my sinus cavities were dry. It had nothing, and I was living in Toronto, which is so polluted, and when I got out and moved to the country, like, Toronto was horrible for my health. The city was horrible. I love living out in, you know, little towns and living up in the mountains in California, but, you know, so it had nothing to do with my eyesight, but anyways, just to say that, yeah, they try to cripple you, you know. I started doing the Bates exercises and got a lot of my eyesight back that way too, or at least was able to use what I had better. But they'll try to cripple you. They don't want to make you better. They just want to give you. And I know that's good for
crutches.
Some people. And if you're totally blind, I mean, okay, what are you going to do? But you got to be careful with these doctors and organizations.
Yeah. And what you learned after wasting thousands of dollars on supplements? Gosh.
Oh well, I mean, especially the so much of the vitamin and the mineral ones. I think, you know, it's just might as well just been dumping them in the toilet. I just think they went right through me. The main thing I realized. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and when we got together, and you realized I just talk about low potency food based vitamins and Angstrom minerals. It's like, yeah, that's definitely
perfect
where to go.
Sense. Not ground up she shells. But the other thing I realized was, is like, you take the supplement, and if it doesn't make any big difference in your life, don't keep on paying for it, you know. The one supplement, I know vitamin D does great for me in the wintertime. I take vitamin D. I find I need vitamins more than minerals, and I think that's a genetic thing, because my mother's side of the family, they have an incredible ability to absorb minerals. It's scary. Like, if they eat high mineral-rich vegetables, they get sick and, like, get iron overdose really easy.
Right.
Well, Nicole's side doesn't seem to have that issue, but my wife's side. But digestive enzymes. I do take digestive enzymes all the time. I just stopped fighting that. It was just like, I take these enzymes, I feel great. You know? I digest food better. My son's the same way. We don't give him digestive enzymes. He's screaming. We give him and he's okay. So, like, I'm happy to pay for them. Other than that, you know, I'm multivitamin, food-based type multivitamins. I'm not taking the Angstrom magnesium right now, but Nicole is. Just, we have a lot of expenses, and it just didn't seem to make much of a difference for me, and I just wonder if it's because I absorb magnesium very well, or I'm not sure what the deal is, but
it's
a miracle for Nicole. Yeah, but vitamins,
yeah,
I find...
Yeah, if you're genetically absorbing minerals, yes, you've got such a fantastic diet, you're probably getting enough minerals and magnesium that way.
And the interesting thing with the whole Vata issue, even though the digestion tends to be weak, because of the high metabolism, they do seem to, I don't understand all the details of the whole thing, but I just know that in Ayurveda, they say Vatas need the least amount of vegetables out of all the doshas. Which I found interesting. So like kaphas, they say kaphas don't only need to eat grains. They don't need rice or anything. They could eat vegetables and protein, and that's all they need. While the vatas, they need more grains and starches and fats. They need more of the heavier foods and the protein foods. That's more important to them. And, you know, I was always thinking, well, the more vegetables I eat, the healthier I'll be. And I eat vegetables, you know, twice a day, and I can't even imagine not having lunch or dinner without vegetables. It just seems odd to me. But,
interesting. Well, maybe it's because Vatas are absorbing minerals. There's so much we don't know about nutrition and diet. We just don't. And, you know, it's great to hear your story, because it's how you've figured out what works for you. And the one last question, why you haven't watched TV since 1995?
And I should, you know, justify that by saying, well, one of the reasons is because I moved to the monastery and they didn't have one, but I actually gave it up earlier than the monastery. I just found that, it makes me depressed, because a lot of times what you see on TV is just this better fake world that doesn't really exist, that kind of makes my life look kind of boring. I just feel like, you know, I'd watch this, you know, because they clip everything together and, you know, you don't see really any reality about how things are achieved and so forth. And I just found, and I did that in high school, actually, and I mapped out, you know, exactly everything I was watching, how long it took, and it turned out I was watching like 6 hours of TV a week, which actually wasn't very much compared to the national average. I found out later it was 6 hours a day, but but, you know, I do, we do rent videos, and some of the videos we do usually, but we're pretty strict about it. We rent a video, we haven't actually rented a video in a month now, but just because we've been busy, but usually it's just once a week we actually have that mail order thing where they just have a list and send it to you. And some of them are TV shows, you know. We sometimes watch, I love the Lost series, and big Doctor Who fan, and that's about it. I really like the last TV show I ever watched on television was way back in 95, was Due South, about the Canadian Mountie who was living in Chicago. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, that was cute. Okay, well, you're a media ecologist on top of everything, so I think that kind of wraps it up. We've delivered what we promised. We've had a great opportunity for people to meet you and find out your experience. So thank you very much, John. Any final words?
There was something, but probably doesn't matter. I think that, you know, the main thing I think for people is, you know, they just got to you know, figure out what works for them, and
right.
I mean, that took me my whole life to realize, you know, it was just that I was constantly trying to fit into, you know, and even if stuff makes sense intellectually, because raw food to me, if raw food lifestyle makes perfect sense to me, but it just doesn't work, you know, so it's like,
I know, and it's unfortunate when people, like either vegetarian or vegan or raw food, they get very fanatic about it and think that's the answer and try to, you know, make everybody else do it. And it just doesn't work for everybody. So I really, you know, this is what we're trying to do in the Future Health Now. We give people choices and tell them, you know, do what suits you and your body and what makes you feel better. And we support people in doing their own experiment.
And I think the scary thing that can start to happen is you start to think, well, if you get your diet right, if you get just one aspect of health right, your whole life's going to be perfect and somehow. And I think that's what happens with some of the fanaticism. Like, you know, if the whole world would just stop eating dairy, you know, then we'd have world peace. I've heard, like, the most outrageous claims that can happen just from diet, you know. And I just, it seems like some type of obsessive compulsive disorder. And I found myself getting into it at some points, too, where it was just like, you know, life's pretty complex and there's lots of stuff in there. And I, you know, this stuff is really important, but it's, you know, getting it perfect. I think that was the biggest thing. You're never going to get it perfect. And, you know, it's like, I like the 80%, get it 80% right and good enough.
Very good. Okay, then we're going to wrap up now. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, John. We're here at the end of 2009. Happy 2010 to everybody, and thank you for listening.